A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here. And I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome to a Thursday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Longtime friend, Derek Montilla, is here at the Steel Cage Podcast of Arizona Sports. He's out there watching terrible-ass Diamondbacks games every week. The last place in the NL West, Arizona Diamondbacks. Couldn't relate. The first place Braves, wouldn't understand it, but it sounds pretty dubious. I don't know what the latest is on Bumgarner, but Robbie Ray not being very good and probably leaving, but all bad there. Like, the Blazers might win tonight as we're recording and then knock out the undefeated Suns. Like,
what are you
Derek,
doing?
How are you doing?
I'll leave right now. Like, we don't. Is this how you welcome a guest onto your show? You're the worst, Chase Thomas.
I was really wrong about the Diamondbacks. Like, I had them as like a dark horse for a wild card. I like what Hazen's been doing. I like Marte a lot. I like this group. They're feisty.
Let me elaborate
terrible.
A little bit. I'll just say they're not terrible.
I mean, they're the worst in the NL West.
They just took two out of three. They're not actually. They are one. They're half a game better than the San Francisco Giants.
Oh, they just passed the Giants because they're Rocky series.
Yeah, well, just pay attention. I'm just saying, if you're a sports guy,
you're
probably
great.
Understand. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. But that's fine because it's also a 60-game season, and they're like a whole four games back from first place. I'm not super worried about it, but I also didn't have really big ambitions for this team. What I am disappointed about, though, is the parts that you just brought up is Madison Bumgarner and Robbie Ray. The young pieces of this team have been coming together quite nicely, with the exception of, you know, Luke Weaver, who's struggled at times. Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen have both been excellent. I really like Young, who has been in the bullpen, who I feel like should be a part of the starting rotation. But the guys that you thought you were going to be able to count on, you know, the 1-2 of the rotation have been the parts they can't count on. And I really think that's been the biggest problem. Like, their offense has really stunk at times, but the fact that they can't count on the ace that they just brought in to take over in Zach Greinke's absence, and Robbie Ray, who's in a contract year, you know, so really he's just hurting himself as far as his ability to get a big contract outside of this year. Like, I was pretty sure he wasn't going to re-sign with Arizona in general, but at this point, I'm not sure who he's going to sign with. I'm not sure who's going to want him with the performances that he's had so far this year. So, yeah, it's not been great. At the very least, though, I have been able to go to the ballpark, and that's been nice to actually.
How weird is it being there with no fans?
You know, it's not weird without the fans, but the piped in crowd noise is weird at times, because when you're sitting there and you're not listening to the announcers on TV, you start to hear the pattern of the crowd and when the MP3 starts and stops. It's like when you have a sound machine and it's like plays a wave sound with some seagulls playing, but eventually you start to pick up the pattern and you're like, oh yeah, it's about 30 seconds long and it ends right here. And there it starts again. And you can start to hear that kind of, you know, repetition in the weird crowd noise and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, I don't typically, like, I miss being able to go down and get food and go down and kind of be able to watch the game from different angles. It's not like the press box doesn't have a great view. But I think, like, I just feel a little claustrophobic not being able to, like, move around like I normally do. When I'm at the ballpark, I go down, I get my slushy drink from the you know, coffee place, and I watch the game from behind home plate for a little bit and down behind and, you know, certain areas. And I like to take walks and be at the ballpark. It's definitely a weird feeling to have to sit in the press box the whole time and wear a mask and do all of that. I still feel pretty lucky, though, to get to be there, because I know nobody gets to watch live sports in person. And yeah, it's a big deal for me to be one of the few that gets to be there covering the game and seeing it live. Still love the crack of the bat and the sound of the mitt. You know, I don't need all of that crowd noise stuff. I don't know how much the players need it. I really don't. But yeah, I do dig that they still do, like, all of the walk up music and the train sounds for David Peralta and all of that kind of stuff. That stuff I like, regardless of the fans being there or not. I think that gets the team hyped and all that. Some teams have still been doing fireworks and such when home runs go off. I feel like that's a little bit excessive, but hey, do your thing, man. Celebrate, enjoy yourselves. I don't know. It's a weird thing. And
I mean, whatever you want to do at my field, I'm okay with whatever at my ballpark, as you know.
You don't live in Atlanta anymore, Chase. You know that.
I didn't say Atlanta. I'm saying your ballpark. What is it called?
Oh, my ballpark. Oh, Chase Field.
Yeah.
Chase. Yeah. I don't like that.
My ballpark.
I don't like that you did that. That's gross. That feels gross and weird.
My ballpark.
Because I'm inside of you.
Yeah,
you
know? You're inside of me.
I don't want to be inside of you.
Are you inside of me 4 days a week?
I'm going to be inside of you tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
And
hell
Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
I mean, look, we've known each other for a long time.
And this is getting weird. This is bringing up that WAP video and some of the lyrics from it. I think we should just move on to pro wrestling. That's what
Yeah, that's going to be way less weird. Because pro wrestling is never weird, as you and I know. You know what's funny? I have a friend of the podcast, William R. Washington, love him on RBR Wrestling, has been talking about Scorpio Sky being built up as the most logical person to beat Cody for the TNT title. The new TNT title looks great. I love the finished product. It looks very good.
I agree. Scorpio
Sky obviously did not win.
I don't know why they didn't have that finalized, by the way, before they debuted.
I don't really care. Like, it's fine. No one's going to remember any of that. Like, I don't really care. No. I care about the finished product. Right. No one's going to remember. Like, we're not going to remember a year from now that they went a long time without the finish. Like, we're not going to care. Like, it's just, we're not going to remember it. But I was surprised as I was watching this because he had talked me into it where it's like they're padding his stats. He gets his own theme music. He's added to the intro. Like, Scorpio Sky is now a important part of AEW Dynamite. Then he loses. And then we have the Brody Lee segment. I was stunned. Like, I wrote down in my notes, I was just like, this was all baffling to me. Like, I really, it made sense that Scorpio Sky would be the one to beat Cody. And he just didn't. Were you stunned that Scorpio Sky, who was built up as the most logical challenger and as this new guy who broke away from SCU, not beating Cody? Were you surprised?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I was surprised. And I'll also give AEW credit because of the fact that they have done such a good job with this TNT title and giving anybody a shot at it, including Warhorse, who's good. Personally worked with here in Phoenix, and like just
he's
had
not
a chance
signed, though, right?
No, he's not signed, but I just had an opportunity to talk to him, you know, like about the internet stuff he does and his character.
He's just good.
And I just realized he's just like really brilliant. Like the stuff he talked about, it was really smart, and he didn't overcomplicate it. He just was like, yeah, man, shit, I got this thing 3D printed up and I spray painted a part of my house and I do these videos and like, you know, I only knew him prior to that as being this guy that, you know, ripped his mouth on a turnbuckle during a match, you know, that was it. And so like, that's not a great reputation to have. That's not a great character. And I didn't even know he was the same guy, you know, but he did a great job of developing something that people found interesting and funny and wanted to get behind. And that support pushed him all the way to AEW, you know, having him as one of the contenders. But you're absolutely right. It felt like they were kind of throwing anybody at him to show that anybody could have a chance. And meanwhile, they were doing this kind of slow build with Scorpio Sky. Scorpio Sky is one of the best wrestlers that AEW has. So to be honest, SCU's kind of held him back a little bit. And I'm glad to see him break away. I think that he will be one of their biggest stars. I think that they're putting the slow burn on too many of their top stars, though. I don't
hate that because of the no fans.
I don't either. But eventually, we got to get around to it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's the thing is like maybe doing something like turning the Bucks heel would be a big shift.
Well, they're definitely not after this week.
Right. No, I get you. But I'm just saying, like, there's times where it feels like they don't want to be the stereotypical pro wrestlers who start their own company and push themselves so much that they're doing a detriment to themselves and their company by doing that, because they still are some of the best pro wrestlers on the planet, including Kenny Omega and the Bucks and, you know, whatever. But also, Omega's a tag team champion. Cody's the TNT champion. So it's not like they're not having success. They're just doing this sometimes with some of their guys that at this point they could already be past that point and pushing them. Scorpio Sky is absolutely that guy. And yeah, I don't know what to think. I think that the situation with Cody and that title has become the best thing since John Cena was holding the US Open Challenge. And to a degree, this is even better. I would argue that it's better just because they took that extra
step.
Can
I ask you something about this?
Of bringing in these guys, these top indie guys that are, you know, well known, not just jobbers to wrestle him.
I mean, yeah. Ricky Starks got signed because of this, and Ricky Starks is great. Like, he's going to be a star. Like, I love Ricky Starks.
Ricky Starks. He's great.
I think Sonny Kiss is still his best match.
Yeah.
Sonny Kiss made him work differently, because I am not the biggest Cody match fan. Like, I'm just not. Like, I think he is.
Oh.
He's good at do you think he's turning, by the way? Like, do you think we're heading to the new Force Horsemen with him and FTR and Thule and Arn and Sean Spears? Do you think where they're going?
Well, first of all,
I think he works better as heel. The reason I asked that is I think he really works heel in that match, in the Sunny Kiss match, and that's part of the reason I liked it more, is I think he's a much better heel wrestler.
Did he? I mean, hasn't he kind of worked a little bit heel in a lot of these matches when the opponent is
like an indie darling?
Yeah, like I feel like,
but that's where his bread and butter is. I think that's why I've enjoyed it more, is because he actually, for whatever reason, his wrestling style is very conducive for heel work, but the fans love him. Like, I was at that show where he won the steel cage match against Wardlow, and everyone's just chanting Cody. Like, Cody was just super over, and he is just like the guy who gave pro wrestling fans this new amazing thing. And it's very hard to turn heel when you are looked at as like the benefactor for this great promotion that people are happy exists. Like, that's a hard thing to make. It's going to be hard for Cody to make people hate him. I really do believe that.
Well, here's the thing, is it's not that hard because they've already come under a lot of scrutiny. You had this AEW Heels subscription service for women that was supposed to be all inclusive, but it's not inclusive of women that can't financially pay for a subscription service. And it also doesn't seem to be very inclusive of trans women or, you know, other gender types that aren't necessarily classified as women.
People are looking to hate Brandy. Like, what's not fair for Brandy is no matter what she does, people are going to compare her to Stephanie, and that's not fair.
People are going to scrutinize everything, but also I think Brandy went really heel with it with one of her tweets, and she was really just like super, I don't know, she was super braggadocious about herself. I know she was doing it kind of in jest, but it doesn't help the situation. And it also doesn't help that Cody is taking to Twitter and defending her and like arguing with people that are, you know, saying mean things about her online. But that's the type of stuff that could lead to a very natural heel turn, both with people and storyline wise. I think that Cody already has the ammunition at this point to kind of go in a heel direction. And I don't know, that Four Horsemen thing is pretty good. It's not talked about enough that Tully Blanchard had a manager at one time that was also called the Perfect Ten, by the way.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, it was a
I also learned this week that he was really blackballed and got really, really screwed over by WCW and WWF back in the day. That he was the one who got screwed over in the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised by that. I'm also not surprised by...
It's a good text thread if you have not read it from... from Deadspin. I don't know where he's writing now. I think he has a newsletter, but David Bixman. I did not know this, but it was interesting.
Baby Doll was his manager, by the way, the Perfect Ten.
Is it too soon to do MJF and Mox?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
I'm just so nervous about this because, like, if there was ever one match that just needed fans, like, MJF and Mox, the atmosphere for that, with a full arena, would just be incredible. Like, it would be so over the top. And Mox coming out of the crowd and MJ, like, everything about that match, I feel like needs fans. I really, really do. But I also understand that they're like, we can't hold this off forever. We can't wait for COVID to be gone. We have to do this. I understand it, but I'm still nervous about it.
I wouldn't be nervous about it, but it's this weird thing that's kind of like the Drew McIntyre situation with WWE.
Well, he sucks, so we can move on there.
Oh, god damn you, Chase. But like, that's the problem, is that you can say he sucks, I can say he's great, but there's no litmus test for it. There's no crowd. So there's no dead reaction or there's no pop. To be honest, at one point, Drew was getting a pretty huge pop before he was even champion with his antics. And I feel like
you can do whatever you want to do, but
only got Drew, better.
You can keep going down this road. But like, who didn't love Drew and Heath Slater and Dolph Ziggler for the last month? Just all time great stuff from Drew.
I don't know if this is a knock or not, but I'm just saying that there's this thing in pro wrestling where they're comparing it to not doing with their companies, with AEW and other things, what the WWE has done with Drew. and that is put someone out there who they really have no clue how the fans are reacting to it. There's not this huge talk online about Drew, so you can't say that he's causing a buzz, but there's also not this open, like, you know, like there would be with a lot of guys that fans hate. There's not this like desire to see him lose the championship, like when Roman was champion or something of that sort. There's like no reaction. And to be honest, that's worse than having even a bad reaction, because a bad reaction, you can spin into a storyline thing, or you can do whatever to manipulate the fans' natural reaction to this person into something else or into a storyline. When there's no reaction, yeah, there's you have no idea where to go with that. You know, I know that there's been mostly praise for Drew, but it's more like, yeah, he's doing a good job. You know, like there's not that, like, you know, we're blown away, he's our champion and I love this guy so much kind of reaction to him. And you usually have that from a section of the WWE fans, no matter who's champion. So that's one thing that's definitely lacking with that. I think that whole situation is what's causing companies like AEW to kind of put everything on pause for the time being. You know, they're holding off on making any major matchups, and they're holding off on making any major feuds until they can have fans back in the stands and can go back to, you know, running a wrestling show to the way that they're used to running a wrestling show. I just think that that's an undetermined amount of time, and I don't know how long you can hold off and do that for. You know, I will say that the TNT championship, though, that's been something that's been exciting. And no matter who the challenger it seems to get my attention and the attention of the wrestling world. So I think they've done an excellent job with that.
What is Orange Cassidy's ceiling? I've been thinking about this a lot. Is he with fans? I think he's the top like babyface in this company. Like, I think he has top babyface potential. Is Orange Cassidy somebody they should build around as their top guy over the next 5 years? Like, is he someone who's a cornerstone? Like, I don't know the answer to this. I go back and forth on this. Like, his match with Jericho this week sucked. I don't know how much of that was his fault or Jericho clearly coming off a bender. I don't know. Like, I love Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy is incredible.
You're kind of right about this. I'm gonna kind of agree with you on your confusion here. Because Orange Cassidy is the kind of guy that when I saw the first time on an independent wrestling stage, I fell in love with, but immediately thought, like, okay, well, I've seen that. Like, I didn't have this immediate desire to see more, because I felt like I'd seen the entire show.
Yeah. You were like, this, like, is The Rock.
It's this aloof guy that's too cool for wrestling, but eventually and inevitably will get pulled in by his opponent based on a level of disrespect or a level of physical altercation that requires him to physically defend himself and now fight this dude. But he doesn't want to, and at times during the match, he'll even try to, like, go back into his cool guy mode and, like, walk away, and then, of course, he gets pulled back in, so he has to beat a guy's ass even more. That part I loved and I adored about him, but I just didn't think that the gimmick or the idea had legs. And I would have never thought in a million years that it would have been something that would have had legs for television, because after you see it 5 or 6 times, you're like, okay, I've seen that. That was my problem with several Lucha Underground gimmicks. It was cool, but once you had seen it a half a dozen times, you're like, oh, okay. All right, I got it. I get it. Yeah, got it. You're going to do the same thing every time. Like, Orange,
but
at
he's
least.
He's really good at it. Like, he's really, really good. Like, he was great in the debate last week. He's
good at
really
keeping
talented.
It he's good at keeping it fresh, and there's no pun intended there. But he somehow keeps that gimmick going. And I think a big part of it is because he himself understands it really well, and AEW is just letting him go. Like,
if I were to tell you that he reminds me a lot of Drake Maverick, what would you say?
I would say it would make sense for you to say that in the aspect that Drake Maverick comes off like the kind of guy that can't really defend himself and then will prove to be, you know, capable of fighting.
Yeah, he
and
doesn't want to. You're just like, I don't think he looks like he should be able to hang with the rest of these guys. But then you watch the match and you're like, this is great. But also, like, he is the most entertaining person in every segment that he's on. Where it's just like, and you know, when he gets a segment, it's going to be good. So when Orange Cassidy gets his time, he'll be good. But you don't build your show around Orange Cassidy or Drake Maverick. You just have them as a part every week. And you're like, this is happy.
I guess that's a great point, is it's really hard to be a top guy that they build the show around when you're going to be seen as being repetitive and you're going to be seen as, you know, someone that's going to get a lot of TV time every week. So your material better stay fresh and all of that stuff. It's sank countless number of superstars on WWE. I mean, that was the main problem with John Cena. It wasn't that John Cena wasn't talented or ridiculously gifted in the ring when it came to doing certain things, like, you know, being the strongest dude in the ring at times. But when you are the guy that's relied on to be the focal point of the show week in and week out, all of your little foibles, all of your, you know, little things that you can't do are going to be exposed. If John Cena was one of those guys who was like a mid-carder who was just called on to do like a short segment every week and then come out and do the FU on some big ass dude that was two times his size, fucking he'd be the most over guy in WWE still to this day. You know, I think that no matter who you are, it makes it really hard when WWE wants to put the entire show on your shoulders and make it where people get sick of you. You know, I don't think Orange Cassidy could handle that. I don't think Orange Cassidy could handle being in the spotlight, or his character at least. Not to say the guy can't handle it, because I fully think he's capable of it. But I just think the character would grow stale if it was a focal point on AEW every single week. AEW has the luxury of like switching their roster up every week and having guys come out and kind of be, you know, this week we're focusing on tag division, and this week we're going to focus on the women a little bit, even though they never really do that. But they have that opportunity to not let any particular guy get stale, because they can switch up the lineup and you know, give someone like Orange a week or two off where you're like, hey, I want to see Cassidy. What the hell? You know, or at least have him not wrestle, where he shows up and does something, but he's not, you know, wrestling in a ring. And that's, I don't know, that's it. It's not to say that he can't be a top face and a great, you know, wrestler, a great guy for years for that company. I just don't know if that character has that main, you know, baby face going after the AEW championship type of legs to it. I could be wrong, though. That guy's super talented.
Okay. Who do you think, ultimately, now that Scorpio Sky is out, who do you think should be Cody, but also two-parter? Who is the right team to finally upend Kenny Omega and Hangman Page?
I think it's got to be FTR. I think FTR has to be the team to do it. I think FTR... I think they've laid the groundwork for so long this whole situation. They've laid it with Hangman Page being kind of just different from Kenny Omega. I think that team needs to go away, because AEW has done a ridiculously good job of building up Hangman Page, who is somebody that I didn't care for in the slightest, and now I think is one of the biggest stars in their company. And honestly, and I mean,
super young. He's still only 29.
That's what I mean. Yeah, he's super young, but just they changed the perception of him. Don't get me wrong. Like, I know that there was a lot of like, you know, build up around Hangman Page. I know a lot of people liked him in Ring of Honor and stuff like that. I just personally didn't. So I'm just speaking from a position of myself. But yeah, man, I think that they've just completely turned me around on him. And I can't wait to see him be a singles wrestler. And I can't wait to see Kenny be a singles wrestler. So like that tag team, it has me personally foaming at the mouth for them to break up and lose those championships so that both of those guys can go their respective ways. But what was your first question was who beat Cody?
Yeah.
I still think it's Scorpio Sky, man.
So he gets another shot.
I haven't changed on that a bit. I mean, that's not uncommon, right? I mean, all they have to do is hold another tournament or some other situation where he can win an opportunity again. And then it turns into that two-part, you know, situation. And then, you know, then you have Cody versus Scorpio Sky 3 if he wins it for the rematch. And then it allows him to retain over Cody and walk away as being the guy that took 2 out of 3 and proved to be the better man.
Because of what happened here with Scorpio Sky, I would probably move on from that for a little bit. But I know my answer here. I would keep it on him for a little bit, and I would just have Pac. When Pac returns, Pac is the one I would... He makes the most sense to me. And then can you imagine a Pac open challenge for a couple months? Just every week knowing that you're going to have Pac doing 8 to 10 minute matches with people. Pac is the answer here, I think.
That guy had a match with Cara Noir in Riptide Wrestling that was not only filmed beautifully, like one of the most cinematic matches ever, but man, just the story that the two of those guys told, and I didn't even know who Cara Noir was at the time. So like it captivated me to watch this match that had no story buildup and no idea who the other guy was in this ring besides looking like a very overzealous, you know, theater actor, and just watching the two of these guys absolutely tear it down. So I'm completely on board with that. I think that Pac is one of those guys that I'd put up there with probably, you know, the top 5 underutilized guys in this company based on them trying to like downplay and build other people up. And I get it because it's valuable and it works. And you have to do that in order for, you know, the guys you build up to come off as being equivalent competition for the guys we all know are perennial badasses, essentially. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm excited to see where they go with it. No matter what, it feels like every week could be the week he loses it. That's a great feeling. You know, I mean, there's times where I'm like more, you know, like I didn't really think Warhorse was going to come in and beat him, right? But I was with you on Scorpio Sky, and now I feel that a little bit even with, you know, with Brody Lee. Do I think he's going to actually win it?
No. That'd be a bad idea.
But if he did, I don't think I'd be surprised.
I'd be annoyed.
I don't think
if you're going to pull the trigger on Scorpio Sky, you don't pull it on Brody Lee. That's just shitty to me.
That is one thing that I don't want this company to become, is like this place where they just signed a bunch of ex-WWE guys and are going to put titles on them because they made some sort of promise to them or whatever, contractually for them to be champions. And honestly, I don't know. The Dark Order thing hasn't landed with me as well as it did earlier before we knew who the Exalted One was going to be. I still think that they made a bit of a mistake by not having it be Matt Hardy, but you know, whatever. I think that's just my own personal feeling on it. So, but the Brody Lee thing, just even though it's hilarious that he's constantly doing a Vince McMahon parody, it's kind of grown thin after a while on me too.
Transitioning to Impact Wrestling. Are we sure Eric Young should be competing for the World Heavyweight title in any promotion in 2020?
Oh boy. Well, he's a former Impact champion. So
I love Sanity. Sanity's still one of my favorite entrances of all time. An all-time pro wrestling entrance. Just 10 out of 10. You love to see it. He's just not good enough. Eddie Edwards versus Eric Young is not a world title feud.
I don't know, man. I mean, yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of how I felt about every single one of Drew McIntyre's rivalries. It's been like,
oh, no, really? That's a Drew McIntyre problem. See, so here's where you got that messed up. Drew McIntyre stinks, and whatever you see him in is going to be worse because he's actually in it.
Here's the thing. Chase Thomas is a garbage human being, and he says bad things about people who I know who would kick you in the face. Mm.
I don't know. I'm not talking about him as a person. I bet you Drew McIntyre is a delightful human. He
would never kick you in the face. I'm just joking about that.
I think he's a delightful person. He's also a liar. He says, talk less, Clay more. You know who talks a lot? Drew McIntyre. Talks a lot.
He plays a lot, too. He plays a lot.
Not as much as he's talking. He talks a lot these days. He's a talker.
I think that, again, that's a situation of them probably bringing in somebody new that they made promises to. And that's it. No, I don't think so. I think Impact has done an excellent job of not needing to be that landing place for WWE.
Impact's in good shape. They have built their women's division very well. Their women's division is very strong, and their tag team division is now very strong.
They just went after really great talent on the indies. Mm-hmm. Bringing the Motor City Machine Guns back was a great move. I think the North is great. I think that they have a lot of good things going on. And I also think that they made some pretty brave calls on parting ways with people that were really popular in their company.
Right.
That they parted ways with based on a lot of allegations and things.
I mean, they lost their most important figure 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
Oh, whatever. Dude.
Tessa was their most valuable asset. Like Tessa.
Not only Tessa, but the Michael Elgin angle.
I mean, I think Tessa's a much bigger asset than Michael Elgin.
No. But I'm just saying they had a lot of they had a big storyline devoted to Michael Elgin and bringing in Eric Young or whoever he was supposed to be bringing in. I think that they did a better job about assessing indie talent that was available and bringing those guys in like Chris Bay and such, rather than bringing in, you know, Exiles. Impact became a show where you could see some of the top indie talent on TV that really hasn't been given an opportunity yet. As a matter of fact, guys like Chris Bay are basically told by WWE to go to Impact and build a name for themselves first before WWE is even interested in signing them. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's one of those situations where you have to realize that Impact has a role in this whole situation, and that even WWE is aware of what they're doing and their place in basically giving a lot of indie talent their first television time. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of better choices. I think that they have, you know, a lot of great talent down there that they could focus on besides someone like Eric Young. Again, he's a former World Impact, you know, champion. So I think that's their main reason for doing it. I thought the whole attack on Rich Swann was dumb. I thought Rich Swann's retirement speech was pretty hokey and very salmon jacket worthy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't watch indie. I don't watch Impact for that. I watch Impact for Rob Van Dam to make out with his hot girlfriend. That's what I watch it for.
Girlfriends.
Hell yes.
Put some respect on his name.
Who's living a better life than that guy right now? Nobody.
Oh, I can tell you one. Here's the one who's living better than this. So we'll wrap up. Randy Orton.
Ha!
He is the, I will say, the best professional wrestler in the world right now.
Can't argue with that.
He's on another level. Like, everything Randy Orton's doing every week, it's such a shame that he's doing with no fans, because Randy Orton has just been on a mission. 2020, like, we're all complaining. We're all having a terrible year. We're all annoyed. You know who was like, you know what? What if I just had the best professional wrestling year of my life? What if I just like really zoned in and just made the most of it? That's Randy Orton. And it bums me out that he's doing all this with no fans, and like everything with Ric Flair has been great. Like, Randy Orton is playing chess while the rest of the WWE locker room is playing checkers. Like, Randy Orton is incredible right now. Like, he is my favorite wrestler in this company right now. He is someone that is just, he's just perfect. He's like, he's just perfected professional wrestling. He knows what it takes to be great. And he's just like, I'll turn on when I want to. And when I'm not motivated, I'm just not going to. And he's like, you know what? I'm motivated. So I'm going to do it. And I appreciate him doing that because Randy Orton is actually the GOAT. He's great.
Yeah. When you absolutely hit the nail on the head when he's motivated. Yep. That's exactly it, man. He's the best that there is, and he can turn it on whenever he wants to, and he can also coast and like disappear into yes. non-existence when he doesn't feel compelled to put in an effort. The thing about that coasting is that I think that's what allows him to be great at other times, because it's almost like he's gone with an injury, but he's really not. He's just in a feud with, you know, some mid-carder right now, but he'll be back. You know, he's feuding with Mustafa Ali, but don't worry. He'll be
done.
No
one's feuding Mustafa Ali. Mustafa Ali just takes losses from people.
Well, yeah.
It's very sad. Mustafa Ali, like him and Ricochet,
I'm pretty sure that they're both parts of Aces and 5/8s.
I mean, Ricochet's got to be gone. Like, he should not resign. Redemption. Like, Ricochet needs to make it very clear that he's gone. Like, he needs to be very adamant. Like, I'm out of here. This is it.
Hey, let me tell you something. I was present for his final night at Lucha Underground. I was present. I was there for the season finale of season 2 when Prince Puma lost his championship. And even after they went off air, this dude was like exalted by the, you know, fans around the ring and held up like a goddamn god. And I just can't understand how you go from that to being like misused in the WWE roster and being okay with that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Everywhere he's gone, even in New Japan, which is already crowded with an excessive number of stars and hard to break out, saw a tremendous amount of potential in him and always featured him, you know, pretty highly. I don't know. I'm with you on that. He's definitely somebody that's been lost in the shuffle when it comes to WWE. I never expected to see him be part of a tag team in a million years. Like, that's his thing, that he's a tag team now. That's wild to me. It's another case of WWE merely wanting to hold back talent and companies from utilizing that talent so that they would, you know, possibly surpass WWE. They'd rather just acquire that talent and do next to nothing with them rather than let them thrive somewhere else. And yeah, I know it's all about the mighty dollar. So it's up to that talent to make that decision to sign. It's interesting sometimes to see like we watched the Talk and Shop-a-Mania with the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, and it was the dumbest hour and a half pay-per-view I've ever seen in my life. But at the same time, it was hilarious. And me and my friends, we drank and we had a great time watching it because it was so stupid and it was so funny, but it was so Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows' sense of humor. Mm-hmm. It was so their brand that they've had on their podcast and everywhere else that they've gotten, but we never got to experience it in WWE because WWE wants to acquire talented people, but then they don't want to let them present their talent. They don't want to let them be talented the way they're naturally talented. They want them to change their ways and be the way that WWE wants them to be. And I think that's their biggest mistake. Is, you know, you take someone like Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows and you try to, you know, dumb down their sense of humor and make it television appropriate, and you have them doing some dumb, you know, jokes about urine and stuff as doctors and that segment they had years ago that was terrible.
I don't want that.
You know,
now.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, it's some stupid, poorly written thing versus it being like what these guys are, which is just kind of silly and ridiculous, and they're very DX adjacent. DX would have never been DX if they never let these guys just kind of do their own jokes and make fun the way they wanted to. If they were controlling DX, it would have been stupid as hell.
You know? Yep. I agree. All right. Well, we got to wrap up here. Derek, this has been great as always, sir. What can we check out from you this week on the Steel Cage or Arizona Sports, or what can we look out for you?
Well, check out thesteelcage.com always. We have the main podcast where we chat about wrestling. And then we also have the snack podcast that I co-host with my friend Tim, where we do snack ratings. We just did, some ridiculous snack. Skittles dipped. So check that out if you're interested in those. Also on Arizona Sports, I'll be covering the Arizona Diamondbacks throughout this weird 60-game season. So please check out that. And if you're interested in hearing a podcast about baseball and the Arizona Diamondbacks for some reason, check out the Ain't No Fang podcast that's available on ArizonaSports.com.
Go do that. Derek, keep up the great work, sir. And we will talk soon.
Thank you, Chase. Thank you for having me. And thank you for belittling my sports teams.
Up this podcast ever.
I know. Can I? Well, here, let me change that. I hate you, Chase. I hate you so much.
That feels much better. Thank you. That feels like home.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. Goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.